trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theatre.
Radio at its best.
And now back to Satchmo.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. Much more than I ever knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
From the Art Center in Carrboro, this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Well, Jack Frost may be dragging his frozen heels outside the window, but we're sitting here in WCOM cozy as three nuts in a squirrel nest. I got Rocco at the helm, I'm happy to say. And I've got special guest once again, music, media, and film producer Mike Andreas.
Good morning.
Whom I'm fishing off the road between travels whenever I can get him. I wanted to begin the show with wishing you folks a little Happy New Year. I made this statement on Facebook, and I thought I'd make it on the Speakeasy as well. So Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater is back, and we are brought to you by the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, as well as the Apex Arts Council. Waiting for the song, The Entertainer. Well, I'll go with it anyway. I was expecting a different piece of music, but we'll go with this one. Here's wishing everyone a very special, happy and fulfilling new year. I wish you joy and all good things to come. Avoid getting tangled in that annual web of resolutions, as there are centuries of dust-borne, dry-rot coils of it in an abyss that awaits your best intentions, too. Just go out and do what you can get done, and accomplish it in ways you can say naturally and enthusiastically. Don't bury yourself in guilt for what you can't get done. Just drop those notions off in any church. They have plenty of it and will hopefully know what to do with yours. Have your wits about you and set your longitude and latitude on gratitude, and your moral compass will not fail you. Godspeed and blessings through it all. Cheers from the Speakeasy. And now we'll just go on with the rest of that music.
Community Radio for Chapel Hill in Carrboro. This is 103.5 FM WCOM.
Well, I'm just going to go break into conversation here with Mike Andreas, whom I have sitting next to me here. I need to turn my mic up a little. Can you turn me up a little on yours there? Thanks. For some reason.
We're getting situated here.
Yes. For some reason, one of my ears went dead.
Oh.
Hey, so cue us into what's been going on. You've been traveling since the last time I saw you,
three weeks
ago.
Well, I was, with the holidays, I was home pretty much during the holidays, but I have a trip coming up the middle of this month, and a couple trips later in the year. I'm doing these orchestras with movies with live orchestra, which has been a lot of fun, touring all over the world. On Facebook, they have the thing where you click countries you've visited.
Right.
I pretty much turned all of Europe red, but just this year,
wow.
I've visited 13 countries in Europe in the past 12 months.
Well, how does your lonesome wife feel about that? She hardly sees you anymore, I suppose.
Oh, she's independent. she can take care of herself.
Oh, I'm sure.
Miss her. Well, and when I was in the Army in the 80s, I called home once a month, but it's a different planet now. I mean, I'm in Hungary, texting her on the phone going, "Hey honey, what's going on?" She's, "Oh, I've just fed the goats." And
yeah.
So we
don't have to miss a beat anymore.
We carry on conversations constantly from all over the planet. I realized a friend of mine was in Japan and I was in Krakow, Poland, and my wife's in North Carolina, and we're carrying on a three-way conversation from three different points on the planet.
That is amazing. Yeah,
so
totally new world.
So you don't really leave and disappear. We were talking about the nautical life earlier. We were talking about the nautical life earlier, and
yeah.
You love the sea, and I've never been around the sea. I'm afraid if I was, I would fall in love with it. But you'd go to sea, you'd be gone for months, right? You'd go to sea, and you'd be gone for months, and the lives wouldn't change by the time you came back.
Sorry, folks, we're having some technical difficulty. Can you cut your mic off? Okay. Thanks. I'm just picking up every noise you're making over here. We are having, I have no idea what's going on with this. We have Hal in the studio, H-A-L, from 2001 Space Odyssey. It's
Hello,
doing what
Dave.
It wants this morning. Wasn't even supposed to play that particular music earlier. We were supposed to have the entertainer, and I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Oh, that's all right.
I'm just letting Rocco know what I'm hearing. Anyway, so back to you.
Oh, just the traveling has been really great.
No doubt.
I'm about to hit 100,000 miles on my American Airlines account. So
I guess you're getting some benefits in flight?
Yeah. Put you to the front of the line, but the irony is the front of the plane gets to the destination just as quick as the back of the plane. And it's not, we all arrive together, so I don't, it's funny. The people rush to get into their seat. For what? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure to be the last one on the plane.
In a hurry to go nowhere.
Yeah.
In many respects. So where was the last place you set up to do your thing?
The last show I did was in Norway. Oslo,
okay.
Norway.
Well, that's right. I remember.
I was in Sweden a couple of nights before the night of the Paris attacks, which was kind of
Lord,
harrowing.
Yeah. We talked about that time you were on.
We did.
Yeah.
So that's the last trip I took. I haven't had. Oh, I take that back.
No, you took another one.
There was a small one.
Yeah.
I was in Huntington, West Virginia.
Okay.
Doing Nightmare Before Christmas with the Huntington Symphony.
Fantastic.
And a beautiful old theater. The theater was an old vaudeville house built in the 20s, and it's fallen into. It's not in disrepair as much as it's just dirty. The paint, it's dull. The gold leaf needs all cleaning. But it's all the plaster's still there. It's a gorgeous theater. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. I wasn't prepared to. It just sort of coming to my head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of a few of these architects' theaters that still exist.
Wow.
And most of them have just fallen into disrepair, been torn down, turned into condos. And this one still exists. But Huntington, West Virginia is not a hotbed of investment.
No, you don't think of it that way.
And they need like $30 million to restore this theater.
Oh, Lord.
So I hate to see it disappear.
Well, interesting enough, the Carolina Theater in Durham was a former vaudeville house. Even had the Three Stooges on it at one time.
Oh, yeah.
And also the Temple Theater in Sanford was a vaudeville house.
And I as a high school kid, played in the Greensboro, in the Carolina Theater in Greensboro, which was another vaudeville
house. Oh, really? Interesting.
Interesting thing about this one in Huntington is they still had the animal cages in the basement when they had animal acts back in the 20s. You could go down into the basement and find all the holding cells for wild animals, and Must have been a different...
Must have been a regular thing, world. Too. God.
Yeah, different world.
Yeah, no doubt. We are completely changing over. I'm still trying to get used to this whole new rhythm, but I tell you, the one thing that I love about it is eventually we will have our politicians where we need them, because we will be able to expose every little dishonest act by communicating with each other on venues like Facebook or whatever, and I think voting and getting the right people in office is becoming a whole lot more in our favor.
Well, you know, you talk about... keeping people honest. I think this mass communication. I mean, there are every person has a movie studio in their pocket now. So
exactly
anything that's done is done in the open. You know,
and it's amazing some of the talents that are coming forth.
You know, it's funny. I just got contacted by a restaurant chain that saw some footage. My father had an 8mm camera, and in 1966 we were at the Rose Parade in Pasadena, and my dad shot footage of the floats going by, and that your Walt Disney was the Grand Marshal. So we have 8mm footage of Walt Disney going by, and I posted that footage up on. I had it all transcribed. I had it all turned into video, okay. And telecinned, and so I put it up on Facebook, on YouTube, and I've had thousands of hits of people going. There's so little footage of that era.
Interesting.
That any footage is priceless. Yeah. But now. How many, at a Rose Parade, what would you say, 50,000 people are shooting video? When my dad was shooting video, there might have been 10.
Everybody now has got a camera that they don't even know all the things this camera can do.
It drives me, I think it's kind of ironic that people will be in a concert, and you'll see 1,000 people holding their cell phone up in the air, videotaping the concert.
Yeah.
And then that night, you know, 1,000 versions of that concert go up on YouTube. My friend, who's a video expert in L.A., was telling me that I want to get the statistic right, but I think he said that the equivalent of a feature film is uploaded to YouTube every minute.
My God. Just to think of the memory banks.
Maybe it's every second. It's staggering.
Rocco, did you figure out what was going on with our instrument?
I believe I figured it out.
Oh, really?
What happened was the entertainer was queued up. And then when I started to play it, it jumped to another.
Oh goodness!
Another instrumental, and that happens with our equipment sometimes.
Yeah, I've known it to happen.
And it jumped to another selection, and that's what happened. And we're over here looking at each other. What's going on?
Yeah.
And where is this coming from? And it skipped cut 3 and went to cut 5.
Interesting.
That's what happened. And it happens here once in a while.
So we apologize for all you folks in the coffee houses that just dropped your cups.
Mike, I'd like to ask you something about the Rose Bowl parade. Years ago, the Rose Bowl parade was always on New Year's Day because the Rose Bowl football game was played on that day, usually.
In the afternoon.
In the afternoon. Well, now... it seems like the parade is another date, isn't it?
Gosh, you know, this year I was busy with family and travel and back and forth.
I don't know if it was on New Year's Day.
This is the first year, I think, in a very long time that I didn't even watch it at all. I usually have it on in television.
I know. I don't know if it was on New Year's Day or not.
I think it was. I just didn't catch it this year, now that you mentioned it.
Well, was the Rose Bowl football game played on... New Year's Day.
Should have been. You know, that's their tradition. I would have assumed.
I know.
I just wasn't on my radar this year.
A lot of things have changed in football, college football, with the way they schedule the national championship game and any number of things. There's 30 bowl games, I think, now in the country.
Appalachian State just played their first one and won it this year.
Well, you know, you and I can remember when there were maybe 5 of them, and that was it. You had the Rose Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, and the Orange Bowl, and the Gator Bowl.
And every it seems like every few years they're adding another one.
I know.
And, yeah.
Changing times.
Oh, very much so, changing times.
You were pointing out something pretty interesting with a lot of cable companies now getting a little insecure because people are able to film their own little productions, and the public has great interest in things other than what the quote-unquote gestalt that we're used to. Well, feeding us the information.
Talking about, remember when there were 3 channels and the 4th one was sort of PBS if you could get it to come in. And now, I mean, you can't stop the march of technology. Everybody's watching YouTube. I think YouTube, Vimeo, all those streaming services are eclipsing networks. I remember somebody explaining to me, it used to be the model was one to many. It would be one provider serving many, many people. Mm-hmm. But now we have a model that's many to many, where there are many providers providing content for many people. And you can find a niche that's, you know, I don't know, Armenian folk dancers from Cleveland.
Type in anything you want on YouTube and you can pull something up.
You'll find a group and you can follow them and watch them. So it's the many-to-many model now where it instead of going through a narrow hose, it's a gigantic hose leading many places.
As well it should be. That way the people put the best
stuff
forward.
It's democratic. It's the people vote with their remote. They vote with their web browser.
The truest form of democracy we've ever had, and we should definitely hold on to it.
Where you know your choices aren't delegated by a network executive deciding what shows will be on.
By the fat cats that have all the money, right. Well, it's funny, I heard that mention about politics. I was talking to some friends the other day, and they said despite the fact that these massive conglomerates have spent millions and billions on political campaigns, they don't necessarily have the only voice anymore.
So, no, they don't.
That money really isn't what it used to be.
Well, yeah, you can look at the lobbyists are kind of losing some of that.
I hope they lose their ass, personally. Yeah. That's just me.
I think with informed people with access to many ideas and many other people's observations, and not just the observations you're force fed, but the observations of everyday people. That's democracy.
Absolutely, yeah. Everyone should have a say so and a hand in it, and we should be able to pick somebody with the qualifications to at least run for that office. That's got nothing to do with money. If it's just a regular Joe, but if he's qualified for the position, put him in it, because he's likely to do better than most of these people that have so much money that they're numb to doing the right thing.
Well, I think the original intent of the American experiment was that everyday people would spend some portion of their life serving their fellow man in some form of government. I participated for a while in city government in the little town I live in. I went to a lot of town council meetings and got to know them, and I really got a sense that really real government is at the local level in this country. I mean, what towns and municipalities do for their people affects you way more than you know. I started visiting town council meetings, realizing that these are the guys who really impact your life. I mean, the big overarching issues in Washington sort of crowd out all of the little decisions that get made at the state, county, local level, and if people were really to participate and sort of take back their government, if that's really a thing.
I think that's happening a lot more now.
Participate in the county. Go to your county board of commissioners meeting. Go to the town council meetings. Get involved in the school board.
Sign up to things you believe in.
Rather than complain about Washington. Get involved in, where you can drive to.
I have one more statement that I want to offer in that regard, and then I want to go to one of your pieces of music, if you don't mind. Just something to sort of sum up what we just talked about. I'm putting this on Facebook as a collection of writings I'm putting together and will eventually publish under Word Medicines. And on Facebook right now, it's just on as my thought for the day. Let us be the government by tanning the hides of those bureaucratic numbskulls we have working on our behalf in Washington, D.C., and everywhere else in this country, and those abroad, until they get it right or get fired. Let us inundate our wannabe Congress and representatives with letters and phone calls regarding things we, the people, want done, instead of the fat cat 1% they now serve exclusively. Tell them to go green, generate more recycling industries, stop deforestation, so we can breathe clean air into the future, clean our rivers and streams and Mother Ocean, protect the earth from carelessness and the corporate toxicities at all costs, defend nature, insects, animals, life-sustaining biodiversities, and all living things, nurture our natural domains, stop pollution, save our national and regional parklands and waters, protect all aquatic life cycles and underwater environments, stop all murderous overfishing and wildlife consumption, kill all aspects of eminent domain, so the excessively wealthy cannot keep taking what little we have for our life's work, by way of all fascist government their corporate wealth has installed. End fascism, end racism, end greed, and act according to our innate moral compass and in good conscience. Remember, home ownership is a vital part of the American dream, and you, the government, work for us. All of that being said, we must sign up and support every cause and purpose we the people believe in and beat that drum with all we've got until they hear us and make those changes, just so we'll shut up. And then we'll move on to the next thing that needs to get done, like ending GMOs. Don't trust those self-serving idiots to get anything right. Stay on them and let's govern ourselves by actively being the government. And on that note, I think we're going to go to a little music before we go to the music of Mike Andreas.
To 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carborough. Están escuchando a 103.FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carborough. Thanks for listening to our station.
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater. Now back to Claudio.
And at this point, I'm going to turn the stage over to Mike Andreas for another treat of some of your compositions, your original music.
This is I got the chance to write the music for a low-budget film many years ago, and this is a song I wrote for a restaurant scene, and it's just piano and trumpet background music, but it came out pretty nice, so here it is.
That's a great sound, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you.
I like that. Give us a so you say it was inspired by a restaurant scene,
this was a restaurant scene in a film. A restaurant scene in a hold on, let me make sure my computer doesn't go on to the next song.
Uh-huh.
I had to catch that.
We're having that thing
the Gremlins
going on. Whenever you do a live show, you can expect almost anything to happen.
That was a film I scored. I wrote that for a restaurant scene, and the song came out pretty.
That's beautiful.
Pretty good. So
was it a romantic scene? Because I'm kind of
just a couple sitting in a nice restaurant having dinner, and that was sort of a live band in the corner, and that's me playing trumpet. I'm drawing a blank. The piano player that came over and played that piano part for me. It'll pop in my head.
We're going to hold that
LA
against you.
Guy. Yeah, I can't. You know, I'm getting old.
Hey,
I feel old.
Mike, how long did it take you to do that?
You know, my writing process is kind of. When people say, "How long did it take to do that?" I really don't know. I sort of plant the seed in my brain. I would work out a few ideas at the piano, and then I go for a long walk. And when I come back, I basically transcribe what I thought of in my head while I was walking.
Long walks are one of my methods.
Well, it's like
terrific.
The creative, yeah, the creative process for me is like I have to like change hats several times. Sometimes I have to be the arranger. Sometimes I have to be the composer.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to be the engineer. So it's all the changing hats that you have to kind of work out. But that one was, you know, for that movie. That was a lot of fun. Claudia was asking me about other things I'd done. I did get a chance to score a commercial. It was in 1997.
Now, give us the whole scoop on that, because I sort of like the way this evolved.
It was funny. I have a friend, Chris Kohler, who's an engineer, technical guy in L.A., and we did a lot of things together.
You remembered his name?
I did remember his name, because I could picture Chris. Well, because Chris and I, we sweat blood over this 30 seconds of music. He called me. A client of his had gotten an opportunity to do the editing for this Corvette commercial.
Okay,
and they had it all in the can. But then the ad agency in Chicago said, "Well, hey, we want you to, can you come up with the music?" And of course, they said, "Yes, we can come up with the music." Well, then they called Chris, and Chris called me, I remember the phone call. Chris is like, "Hey, you think you could come up with a 30-second spot for a Corvette commercial?" And of course, I said, "Absolutely."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, how quick do you need it?" And he said, "How quick can you get here?"
Great.
So I got in the car. We drove down to Santa Monica, and we sat in the studio. We took turns sleeping on the couch and worked. We worked 24 hours a day for 2 or 3 days.
Just to knock that
out. This is in the 90s, so we had Fairlights, Sinclairs, all the state-of-the-art gear. And the funny part was the producers in Chicago were on 8-hour shifts. So every 8 hours, we got a new producer. So we'd spend 8 hours going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and we'd get it just like they want it. That guy would go home. The next guy would come in and go, "Hey, what happened to the way we had it 12 hours, 16 hours
great.
Ago?
Oh, no.
So we had this complete crazy circle, and we spent many, 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 many hours. We didn't even leave the building. They were bringing food in. Anyway, so Chris and I finally finished it. We thought, fantastic, we've written the music for this Corvette commercial. And we told all our friends and all these people. Come to find out, the ad agency had hired 35 different composers to score this commercial.
Ouch.
And they didn't pick the winner, so they paid everybody. But they pick the winner, the person who's going to be in the commercial, till like hours before they aired it. And mine didn't air. So this is probably the only time you'll ever hear this.
So take your revenge now.
This music on broadcast. Here we go. Ta-da.
So I sense an element of James Bond in there.
Don't play again, please. I had a computer again.
Here we go. It's the live thing.
It was one of those things where this was 97, so they'll make it sound like Batman. They'll make it sound like Indiana Jones.
Right.
Like Star Wars. Make it sound like, that's working with producers is interesting because they tend to speak in archetypes. They say, hey, can you make it sound like, action movie? And
Yeah, I can't even imagine working with a different producer every 8 hours.
That was the challenge. That was the challenge. Anyway.
Well, Rocco, why don't you take us to a little piece of music? We'll take a momentary pause, and the speakeasy will be right back.
Science is endlessly fascinating, and some of the world's most significant science is going on right here in the Triangle. This is Ernie Hood. Join me Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community right here on WCOM LP-FM.
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater here on WCOM. Thanks for making us a part of your day. Now back to Claudio.
And I'm going to bounce over to you, Rocco. You've actually been doing quite a bit of constructing and reconstructing in homes you have up in the mountains. So one of the reasons we haven't played a live show in a while, because when Rocco's not accessible to me, I just sort of play past shows, which, of course, deserve being aired since I've been doing it for 8 years now.
So
what's been going on up in them thar hills?
Well, up in the hills, there's a small cabin that's under construction and just trying to get it completed. But, you know, here at WCOM, we have a number of things going
Big
on.
Big changes.
We do. We have a new board of directors, and it's chaired by Art Minius, who is the former chairman and manager of the Art Center,
yes,
where we are located. And Art is now our chairman, and he is pretty much going to be running the station, and I think he's going to do a terrific job.
I think he's
job.
A good man for the job, absolutely.
If you notice, Claudio, the emails within our own little system, he's already on a number of different things and different issues that have come up in the past 2 or 3 weeks. And it takes someone that can give quite a bit of attention to this station
to
make it run.
He wants to take the station to a higher level, which I'm totally in support of, yeah.
Kevin Shields is also on the board, along with Ernie Hood. We just heard Ernie's promo. And I think WCOM is in a phase where it's going to move forward. We've been on the air now 12 years, 11 and a half years. And
you've been here since early on, day one, right?
I've been here since before we went on the air, about a year and a half before. And I've seen a lot of changes. I think the station sounds better now than it's ever sounded. The way we are broadcasting and what we're broadcasting, we have more good shows than we've ever had. We have a filler program called Undercurrents that plays contemporary music, and it's good.
And fills in whenever there's not a show on the air.
Right, when there isn't a show, if someone cannot do a show here, Undercurrents fills in. So I think WCOM is going to move forward. It's going to move forward.
Stepping up.
It will, and Art is going to do a good job, and he's very conscientious. He's a good fundraiser. Every time we've had something at Hickory Tavern, Art put it together, worked very hard to raise money for the station, and that's as important as anything else.
And Bill McClymont, the former president, who was also an amazing technical part of this whole operation, I think he said he's still going to make himself available for as long as his wife has her show, Courage Cocktail.
Bill did a terrific job. Yeah. He really did. He was the chairman of the board and chief engineer.
He made things look too easy. Now that he's not here, we're really missing him.
Having technical problems already, right now, this morning, if you would have heard the first 5 minutes.
And we think it might have something to do with the cold. Machine like it either.
Very, very possible, Claudio.
So I'm going to bounce over to you, Mike. I know you're off to
Baltimore next.
Is it sound engineer work you primarily do now, or is it composing or what?
Well, I don't know what I am.
Yes to all of the above.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. I stay busy. I stay very, very busy. I'm engaged in a lot of things right now, but this traveling is interesting. It uses a lot of the various parts of my background. I'm dealing with orchestras. My degree is in trumpet performance from the North Carolina School of the Arts.
I'm not surprised.
I've been around music and musicians my whole life, working in Hollywood in the studios.
And then with Copeland,
then orchestrating and arranging, I did quite a number of years. And then I evolved into the technical side, doing music editing, sound editing, working with Pro Tools and digital audio. So these shows that I do are, I travel with a couple of laptop computers that have all the video and all the pre-recorded sounds, like dialogue, effects, are all on hard drives. I interface my system when I get to the venue with high-end projectors, these huge projectors that can project a 60-foot diagonal screen. So my systems have to interface with at least one, if not more, projectors, sometimes as many as four projectors.
Goodness.
And I feed my audio from this interface that I'm using today.
Right.
I take the outputs from an audio interface and go to the mixing console. And I'm sort of the producer, because I'm the one who knows the show. So I'm interfacing with the mixer, helping him know, up here, down
there. Where you want the levels, et cetera.
And the conductor, making sure the conductor is comfortable. So I show up with all the gear, but I also am sort of the liaison for the show, working with the conductors and the front of house mixers and the sound people, and just kind of solving problems.
Well, that's a very valuable role, because the house always needs somebody that they know will speak the language for them.
Yeah, I know. You're talking about being a translator. I feel like, as a music editor and working in Hollywood and television, we're talking about composers and composers speak versus producers speak. We're talking about, these producers in Chicago that they would speak in archetypes, like, hey, could it sound more John Williams? Mm. Or could it sound more
metaphors?
Metaphors. Right. Well, you have to figure out what those metaphors mean. And I think I got a lot of work in L.A. in the studios, because I knew the technical side. I knew some about film, because growing up, one of my best friends was a filmmaker, and I learned a lot about film history and film vocabulary from him. And then, as a music background, so I became like a producer would come to me and say, hey, it needs to be more Scorsese. And I would go to the composer and go, all right, you know this piece, this Tchaikovsky piece, or this, Rachmaninoff or Shostakovich. And I would kind of go, all right, what does he really mean? He means
something edgy,
more edgier. Maybe? Okay. Yeah. So what does that mean in composer speak? Producer speak, editor speak.
Oh, boy. I got you.
Go in one of my ears, and out the other ear came conductors.
And the reason, this is even an issue, being a stage manager myself, is because each of these different individuals that you point to have only so much time to give you for their ear.
Right. You can't go into a lengthy explanation. No. You just have to say,
quick, quick, quick.
Indiana Jones, go.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. because they've got so much going on in their heads that they don't want to hear anybody else's problems. Just give me what I need to know.
Mike, did you ever meet a fellow by the name of Gerald Wilson
in California? Absolutely. I was a student at the Dick Grove School where Dick Grove was teaching. I took the composing and arranging program there, and they brought in speakers, and Gerald Wilson came in and spoke. He was a gem, truly a gem. He told all kinds of stories about writing and arranging.
Who is this?
Gerald Wilson, Claudio. I don't know if he's still arranging. He'd probably be over 80 years old now, wouldn't he?
I would think so.
Gerald Wilson, I believe, was a trumpet player, and then in the Count Basie band at one time or another, and then became an arranger for Count Basie. And then, I believe, left that band and went to Ray Charles and arranged Ray Charles songs. And
he certainly had great taste in music.
Oh, yeah. He was the main person behind this album called Ray Charles Sings Country and Western.
Oh, wow.
That's Gerald Wilson.
Oh, my God. No kidding.
Yeah, and you can hear the big band sound on that album. And then they made another album, but he was just a terrific arranger. And when Ray Charles left, I believe, Atlantic Recording Studios in New York and went to ABC Paramount in L.A., Gerald Wilson took over the band, and it just was a terrific big band. And then he went out on his own in the 70s with his own big band, and I have a number of his CDs. One of my favorite arrangers ever with big band music.
So how on earth did you meet him?
Well, he came and spoke at more technical problems here. Hold on.
We've got some signals going off. Oh, something in a bag somewhere. There we go. I think we got it.
That was me. Talk about studio faux pas. Not turning your ringer off. I get fired for that.
It's a good thing we weren't recording Sinatra, huh?
So Gerald Wilson came and spoke to our class, a composing and arranging class. We were all learning jazz arranging, or not just jazz arranging, but studio arranging from...
Because I was amazed just how immediately you recognized him.
Oh, bam. Him, you know? Oh, yeah. The one quote that Gerald Wilson... that I'll never forget is one of the students asked him, he says, well, you know, in really, really complicated music, you know, we've learned about triads or three-note chords and four-part chords or seventh chords, ninth chords, 11th chords, 13th chords, or all the, you know, he's famous for using really lush, thick harmony. And I remember him saying, this student was like, you know, how do you work with large, complicated harmonies? And he said, well, I use all 12 notes all the time.
I believe he does that on a song called Lighthouse Blues.
Yeah?
And it's terrific. But you can really hear the Count Basie influence. And you'd say, well, is that Count Basie and his big band playing? But it's Gerald Wilson.
Well, he was the main arranger for a long time.
Oh, he really, really is talented.
It was one of those unusual moments when I realized both of you immediately recognized this character. I'm going, okay, I'm in the business. Why don't I know who this is?
Mike, the next time you come on with Claudio, if you let me know, I'll bring some Gerald Wilson.
All right, perfect.
And you'll see what we're talking about.
Well, I'm actually twisting Mike's arm to see if he can join us at least once a month or possibly more.
Yeah, it'd be fun. It would be a lot of fun.
I've got all of his good stuff, I do, and the Ray Charles material.
Yeah, so. The show that I did last year, we had got into a big discussion about the unsung heroes of the arrangers of the business.
Oh, how important is arranging? People don't realize what it is. It can change everything in a tune.
You know, as long as they're not educated, they never really go there mentally.
Yeah, I talk a lot about with students that I have or people that will listen or that. If you're a craftsperson, if you're an arranger, it's really a craft. It sort of crosses between art and craft, but
no
it's
doubt.
A craft.
Yeah.
The craft people, the mixers, the sound people, the lighting people, the technical people. If you do your job properly, no one's ever going to say good job, because if you did your job properly, nobody knows you did it.
That's pretty much true, yes.
So if anybody says, hey, man, you're a great mixer, you probably aren't.
So you can.
They thought about it because they noticed it.
Something caught their attention. Well, this whole thing about the effort to be effortless as an artist. By the time we get on stage, you have no idea how much work we've put into what you're about to see.
The 10,000 hour rule.
Mm-hmm.
If to really master something takes 10,000 hours, whatever it is. And if you've done something for 10,000 hours, you'll be an elite expert in the planet. You just can't help it. You just keep doing it over and over.
So where did that come from, 10,000 hours?
You know, I think it was a teacher that I had at one point. I can't remember going back. You could probably Google it and find out if somebody famous said
after,
But a teacher of mine said, you know, you just... And you know, that's a number of years. That's a decade of work, you know.
Anything you do really well takes a lot of time behind the scenes.
Mike, didn't Gerald Wilson become a professor at University of Southern California?
I think so.
He got into the education realm.
A lot of the guys did. A lot of the ended up either teaching there or the Dick Grove School or at Musicians Academy. I think it was called Musicians Institute in Hollywood. A lot of those guys ended up teaching. Dick Grove had worked on all the variety shows in the 50s and 60s, and I remember him talking about that they would all sit around a kitchen table and do arrangements, and they would get a phone call. And the phone call would be, all right, you know, Dick Cavett Show, Ethel Merman, three courses of How High the Moon, go. And by 4 o'clock, they had to turn in a big band arrangement that went to the copyist that was on the show that night.
Did you ever meet Neil Hefti?
Oh, I never did. But
he was a master.
Oh, you know, I think I might have met him briefly once. But
another trumpet player.
Yeah. Well, what is it about trumpet players?
I don't know.
Henry Mancini. Did he?
He was a trumpet player. Billy May was a trumpet player.
See, there's something to be said for playing the trumpet.
Nelson Riddle was a trombone player.
Quincy Jones.
I think so. Yeah.
Quincy Jones is another one. These fellas are so talented. Quincy Jones is still around.
He's still doing it.
He is.
But do we have one more piece of music of yours that we can go to? Because we've got about 6 more minutes and we got to wrap.
I've got a little 3-minute piece that I wrote for flute, violin, viola, cello, and piano.
Wonderful. I've been hoping you'd bring that one up.
And
what is it called?
It's called Windows. This is Windows. A live performance, so it's got a little bit of a hiss. But
what's the idea behind the title?
I wrote this, and it has to have a name. You can't just call it number 8. So,
unless you're Hal, the computer.
So I think I was probably just sitting at my keyboard looking out the window going, okay, there's a window. I'll call it Windows. I don't know. Maybe it's deeper than that.
Well, you just killed the romance.
I know. No, maybe there's something more than that.
I'm sure there is.
There always is. Well, here we go.
103.5 WCOM. I'd like to tell you that your host Claudio is available as a poet with a one-man band for house concerts, performing original and traditional literary readings. Claudio is well known as a classical poet and master storyteller. His website is claudioarts.com, and also look to his homepage for his YouTube channel link. Back to Claudio.
Well, I think it's about time we wrap up the show, so I want to thank everybody for tuning us in. Wish you all a grand Happy New Year with hopefully great things to all year long. And I also want to mention that I plan, if we can work it out, to bring Mike Andreas on my show a little more frequently. We're also talking about building a show together for the stage. I've had enough friends kicking me in the butt long enough now. I think I've got to get off my couch and put something on stage again, and this includes Ira David Wood, who is just being hospitalized as we speak. He's having surgery on one of his lungs.
Ouch.
So I wish, sending blessings, Ira. The reason I haven't mentioned anything about getting back on stage is because the moment's got to be right. You've got to connect with somebody that you know you really can pull off a show, and that hasn't happened in a long time, but Mike and I have always hit it off since the first time we met, and I think building a show with someone of his capacity would just be amazing.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think we were just talking about how we are sort of multi-trained. I mean, I've done everything from pull cables to conduct orchestras.
And I've done everything from stage manager to getting on stage when the opening act doesn't show up for the folks that are performing.
The true show must go on.
Yes. Which is kind of what today was. We've had a few mechanical glitches on this live production coming at you, so we apologize for any of that, but hopefully you had some fun with it. It's the first time I performed a piece to music I wasn't ready for, but somehow I'm hoping we pulled it off. We'll see what the podcast sounds like.
Well, we will.
Mike, thank you so much for being here, and wish you great success on your travels coming right up. You're doing a thing for Pixar.
In Baltimore,
so the beat goes on.
Yep.
And Rocco, thank you so much. I know you won't be here next year, so we'll probably play a former show, and hopefully back in 2 weeks.
Always a pleasure to be on, Claudio, with you.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks. Cheers.